But we're going to start today with Anant Agarwal, who is the CEO of edX. But more importantly for me personally, we go back a very, very long way. I was a very young graduate student at MIT, and Anant was a very young professor at MIT when our paths first crossed. And it's a great pleasure for me to have Anant here with us today, and we're going to talk about the future of higher ed. Welcome, Anant. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you, Shamana. It is great to be in the event with you.
So, Anant, you are really doing some of the most seminal work in rethinking higher education. What can you share with us that, on, in your mind, in your framework, what are the core issues that you think need to change, and how do you see those evolving?
So our higher education system, it's certainly in trouble in many areas. You know, if you look at technology and how technology has impacted the world, technology has changed pretty much everything known to mankind in the recent stuff, in the last few decades, telecommunications, healthcare, entertainment, pretty much everything. But education has somehow remained immune to change, and I think there are a number of things that could be done much better in education. I would put them into three broad categories. One is challenges with access. Second one is challenges with quality. And the third one is challenges with the model of education. In terms of access, education is a right. Everybody should have access to a great education, but today, if you come from a wealthy background and your parents are well-educated, you're likely to end up with a good education. Not everybody has access to education. We need to change that. The second is quality. In the U.S., for example, it is shocking that if you graduate, and these are statistics from the National Clearinghouse, the graduation rates are also very poor. In public universities, for example, the six-year graduation rate for a four-year degree program is about 60%. If you are in a for-profit private university, the rates are abysmal at 30%. And if you are in a community college, the graduation rates are even lower at about 11%. And these are graduation rates for more years than the average degree program itself. So how do we improve the quality of education so that we can improve better, create better outcomes for our system? And the third challenge is with our basic model. Our model today is still, you know, goes back hundreds of years. You go into college at the age of 18. You go to a four-year college degree program, and you study once in your life, and then you go get a job. That was perfect a few hundred years ago when you wanted to move a youth from an agrarian society to a manufacturing society. But today, people are living much longer. Everything changes almost every 10 or 20 years except for education. And so we need to move to a continuous education system where people can be learning continuously throughout life. This model where you learn everything when you're 18 and then you go into the world simply doesn't work with a new world. So these are some of the three big challenges with that education system.
So what in your worldview does college look like in 10 years, 20 years? Is a college degree still relevant? We're, you know, kind of talking about graduation rates and so forth. Are we, is education still correlated with a degree and graduation, or is it an ongoing learning process? How does it work?
I think if we can make a lot of progress in education, I think we have the potential to reimagine education, and say 20 years from now, I see a much more blended, a much more unbundled university system. So you mentioned degrees. Mm-hmm. Today, degrees are the credential of our time, and I do believe that degrees are an antediluvian concept. I think in the future, degrees will be one of many unbundled credentials that people will look at. There'll be degrees, there'll be badges, there'll be certificates from online courses, there'll be certificates from online programs of courses. There will be a number of types of credentials that people will be carrying. There will be a portfolio, an unbundled portfolio approach to credentials. Even universities, I believe we will unbundle how we think of universities as well. So for example, we will unbundle time in universities. Instead of coming and spending 4 years at a university, imagine that a student can spend the first 1 or 2 years learning online, come to campus for a couple of years, and then go out and become a continuous learner for the rest of their lives, taking online courses from that university or other universities. So it becomes much more continuous and unbundled. Similarly, I believe content will get unbundled. Again, so learning for 4 years from one university, you might get content from a number of sources. You might go to universities and get content. You might get content from content marketplaces where people offer special skills training. You might go to MOOCs and learn from MOOCs. The number of sources where you will get information. So I really see 20 years from now a much larger degree of unbundling, where certainly the university will play a big and pivotal role, but it won't be the only role. It will be much more seamlessly unbundled with a number of other sources of time and content and so on.
And how does that tie into costs? College costs have become outrageous. It's one of the biggest debates happening in higher ed today. And you, I know you have thought a lot about ways to normalize this and improve on this. What time frame can we start to see results in? What exactly are the mechanics using which the college cost can be controlled at this point?
So I think we have to frame the conversation not so much as just cost. I mean, clearly I can give you an absolutely lousy education for a dollar. And so cost in the absence of quality doesn't really compute. So we really have to talk about efficiency, which is the ratio of outcome for a given cost. And so once we begin looking at efficiency of education, I still want a quality education, but at a lower cost. So how do we do that? I think we can do that in a couple of ways. The unbundling that I talked about will enable us to get more efficient in our education system. By unbundling, I will be able to get the best quality content. I will be able to take a great course on government, for example, through a MOOC from Georgetown University. I might be able to go to a university campus for 2 years and get the campus experience. So by unbundling, I will not only improve the cost, but by looking to a number of other sources of content, the cost, the overall cost will also go down, thereby improving efficiency. But we can improve outcomes, we can also lower the cost. And by you bringing in blended online technologies, whereby blending both online and in-person education, innumerable studies are showing that they can also improve the quality of education. And the blending, which enables online learning, can enable sharing of content at scale, that has the potential to lower cost as well. So I think bringing technology into education certainly has the potential to both improve quality and also lower cost.
So, one of the models that you shared in a prior conversation with me that I found very interesting and promising is doing first year or, the first 2 years perhaps of college on an online MOOC basis and then, only get paying for credits when you take a test and pass, it's kind of like get the certification by paying for it, but paying at a much lower rate, not having to pay full-fledged college tuition, and then all that credit that you accumulate in this mode, in this online learning mode, then goes into your college credit portfolio, and then maybe you do the last 2 years or last 3 years of college in a campus. Where are we in terms of timeline of a larger body of universities adopting that kind of model or methodology?
So what you pointed to is certainly a a very exciting experiment that we are doing at edX. EdX is a leading nonprofit MOOC provider where you can go to edx.org and take great free courses from some of the best universities in the world. We have partnered with the Arizona State University and launched Global Freshman Academy. The idea there is to look at how we can improve both the quality of education and also reduce costs, really simultaneously increasing access and lowering costs. There, what we do with ASU is learners can take a whole first year, a freshman year's worth of courses on edX as MOOCs online. If they just want to learn the material, they can take it for free. By paying a small fee on the order of $45, they can sign up for a verified certificate and they get proctored examinations where they are virtually proctored so that we know that their work is their own work. Now, if they pass the courses, then they have the option of grading ASU credit. Now, this is ASU credit on an ASU transcript if they pass the course. And by paying no more than about half in-state tuition at ASU. So this is one concrete example of how we might be able to cut the costs of education for the first year. And following that, they can then transfer those credits to campus education at ASU or other universities that would accept those credits. And so that is one way in which we can use MOOCs and online learning to reduce the cost of education. And so that is one concrete pilot that we are doing.
So Anant, you've always been very, very entrepreneurial. You've done many startups before edX. And our audience is largely entrepreneurs. What are some of your ideas or what do you observe when you look around? You're immersed in this whole future of higher education question. What are some ideas that that you see out there as open problems that are worthwhile for entrepreneurs to dig into?
What is funny, Shramana, is that in the past, education was known as a field where you go and lose money. And so in the past, 3 or more years ago, if you went to a VC, if you went to Bessemer, for example, and said, hey, look, I have an idea for a startup in education, they would run 100 miles from you because education was known as a place where you went and lost money. Today, what is exciting is that education is hot and exciting today. And the number of startup ideas that you can use in education, and the VCs are putting a lot of money into education today. It's a really exciting field. And here are a couple of examples. One example is, as education moves towards becoming much more unbundled, education is not going to be the province of a small number of universities. Content will be needed from all places. So go create content marketplaces. You could create systems to build content marketplaces. You could go and develop content. You could build simulators, educational content, videos, exercises, assessments, and there's huge, huge value in selling this content. So one big area is content. The second big area is platforms. You can go build platforms for content marketplaces, platforms for virtual proctoring, platforms for automatic grading. So software technologies and hardware technologies can be extremely exciting. The third big area for startups is services and support. So as we go online, there's a huge need for tutoring support. How do you use crowdsourcing technologies to bring in advanced learners from all over the world to offer tutoring services? Just imagine imagine a Uber of tutoring where anybody can tutor and anybody can get a tutor. The Uber of tutoring is just waiting to happen. Who's going to go and build the Uber of tutoring? I think there's a lot of money there. So again, to summarize, three areas: content, platforms, and services.
Okay. So actually, along those lines, there are two companies that have really been successful in the education space, both coming from the content side. One of them is lynda.com, and the second one is Pluralsight. Lynda.com recently got acquired by LinkedIn for over $1 billion, and Pluralsight also has a $1 billion valuation now. They're doing over $100 million in revenue. Both of those companies were actually bootstrapped for many, many years and raised some amount of capital much, much later in the game, but now they are, well, you know, Lynda before they got acquired and Pluralsight currently are heavily funded companies. And these two companies actually speak to your, you know, content opportunity that they have validated. How do you see these, you know, a lot of what you've said, these are kind of good examples, don't you think, of, you know, unbundled education?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, Lynda and Pluralsight are great examples of companies. And frankly, I can rattle off, you know, 50 companies in the education, in the broader education space that have been, you know, that have been around for, in some of them for 10, 15 years. And the past 3 years have gotten really, really hard for education. So many companies that kind of meandered around suddenly took off over the past 3 years. And I really credit the whole MOOC movement with these companies suddenly gaining extraordinary valuations. And I think certainly Lynda and Pluralsight are two great examples. So they're focused on the content, they're focused on the content side of things, where they offer certain skills-based courses to people that want to get a special skill in a certain area. So that's a very important area. There are other companies, one of them is a company called, you know, it's called 2U. So that company is in the services space. I said the three areas, content, platforms, and services. 2U is in the services space. They work with universities to put their degree program online. You know, they have a data science program at Berkeley and a nursing program at other universities. A similar company called Academic Partnerships. Many, many services companies. And the third area, you know, you will see companies in the platform space, and one example of this is several examples of this. One of them is called Edcast. Edcast is a really, really high-tech startup that raised a fair amount of money from Menlo Ventures and others. Where Edcast took Open edX, so edX is our platform. The edX open sourced it as Open edX. So Edcast took Open edX. And they are now a virtual hosting company that will offer Open edX hosting for other providers. So they are a platform play. So there are many examples of companies. And Extension Engine is another company that will customize the Open edX platform for you. And they're working with a number of corporations. I think there's a huge market in the corporate training space where corporates, rather than buying systems and buying content and hosting it internally, they really want to go to cloud-based learning, and so there's a huge movement happening there as well. So I think the whole education space is absolutely exploding.
So Anand, what about Coursera and Udacity? Those two are also platform companies in the MOOC space, and while Lynda, Pluralsight have been very successful as businesses, Coursera and Udacity have been tremendously important seats of experimentation around MOOCs along with edX, but they haven't really been successful as business ventures. So there's some, you know, questions that are coming up in the venture capital world as well as in the entrepreneurship world is where does this go? How is are do MOOCs need to be like edX nonprofits or can they be for-profit ventures?
You know, I certainly believe that when you're reimagining education and you're really trying to influence, you know, the universities and create greater access to do research, that it really behooves you to be a nonprofit. And even though I'm a startup person myself and I've done 5 for-profit companies, with edX, we really believe this should be a nonprofit venture, and we launched a nonprofit venture. That said, you know, I think there is definitely room and excitement with for-profit companies like Udacity and Coursera. And certainly the founders of Udacity and Coursera, you know, Sebastian Thrun and Daphne Koller and others, you know, we all go back, you know, a long way. We were friends, you know, over the past couple of decades. I'm certainly a lot of respect for them, a lot of respect for you know, how the whole MOOC movement got started. You know, Sebastian Thrun took his AI course at Stanford and he put it online. And to me, that was a shot heard around the world. And that was a single event that launched the MOOC movement. I, for myself, while at MIT, you know, had been dabbling with online education and had created a virtual lab for circuits. You could call it a MOOC lab, if you will, you know, in 2002. But I really hadn't thought about this as a game-changing way of doing things until Sebastian really put his AI course online and certainly influenced me a lot. And I said, whoa, this is very exciting. What Sebastian did is amazing by putting his course online. And that's when we got excited, and I looked to put my own circuits course online like Sebastian did. And so a number of us followed Sebastian. There were other courses from Stanford, MIT that followed Sebastian's course. And so the second wave of MOOC courses that came out in circuits and machine learning and so on. And really, Sebastian started the sort of the fired the first shot heard around the world. You know, frankly, he's taken he took some of the arrows in his back, but you know, but that's what happens when you fire the first shot. But
yeah,
but I think this whole movement is very exciting.
And where do we go from here? What are you learning about the MOOCs now that the MOOC system has been in the works in business in kind of circulation for several years now? So what are some of the key takeaways from your MOOC experiment? What are the learnings?
So so now since you know, Sebastian put his AI course online in the early fall of 2011, and following that we put up a circuits course, and we announced the MITx and following edX in December of 2011, a few months after. So it's been about 3.5 years for this whole thing, and we've learned quite a bit. Today at edX, for example, we have close to 5 million students from every country in the world. We've had we have about you know, close to 100 partners. What we're also finding is that what started out as, look, let's take a course and put that out there for free, has really evolved into a number of things. So at edX, for example, we created a much more flexible model, a very university-friendly, flexible model. Universities and corporations have told us that they want to use the edX platform in a number of ways. They want to use it for campus education. They want to use it to gather big data of learning. They want to use it for professional education and corporate training. They want to use it to connect with alumni. And, oh, by the way, our university partners in edX, we all want to be self-sustaining, so we need some ways to generate revenue, and that's been slow in coming with MOOCs, but they're doing quite well today. So we've evolved into from offering free courses into offering free courses, and we have upsells, so we can provide people with verified certificates and so on. We can create cohorts for corporations. We also have cross-sells into paid professional ed. And so really what we have today is not your grandfather's MOOC, although that was 3.5 years ago. But it really evolved into a lot more, including campus education, integrating deeply into campus LMS systems. So it's really become a continuum between campus, corporate education, paid courses, free courses. Really, MOOCs have expanded into all of the above. So, Shamana, I think you may be on mute.
Oh, hold on.
Can
you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay. So what happened? So what I was saying is you know, you've shared some of this with me, and also I've you know, kind of kept my eyes open to see what's happening in this area. You know, you have these courses at MIT, your circuits course is a very popular course, and there are, you know, other very well-known, very, very popular courses at MIT. Now, there are other schools, perhaps lesser-known schools, and the more you kind of stretch it out to the edges, maybe in the emerging markets and so forth, that, you know, the use of really high profile courses like the MIT Circuits course or any other major MIT course in, you know, lesser known, less advanced area for delivering education, that's starting to happen, right? That's, I mean, I've seen experiments between MIT and San Jose State, I think it was, that was quite well publicized, but is that a trend that you're seeing in a significant way at this point?
Absolutely, yeah. And it all goes to unbundling. In the past, you had bundled content. The professor would write a textbook, they would write a course, and they would teach a course on campus.
Yeah.
So what we did, starting with the MIT course, for example, we partnered with San Jose State University, where they used the content like a new age unbundled textbook in the campus course for four semesters in a row with very good results. The outcomes for that course went from a 40% failure rate to merely a 9% failure rate. It was well publicized and very successful at San Jose State. We also worked with community colleges. We took an MIT computer science course, Introduction to Python. And that course was offered at Mass Bay Community College and Bunker Hill Community College. And again, very successful. So we were able to demonstrate in the community college experiment that you could take content from one university and after some localization and contextualization, it could very successfully be offered in a blended model in community colleges. And we are looking to expand that kind of blended use of a course in a big way. And the term that was coined for that use of a course, and this term was coined by Armando Fox, who's a professor at UC Berkeley, it's called SPOC. A MOOC is a massive open online course. A SPOC is a small private online course where you're using the course as sort of a virtual course within another university or a high school campus. And so I expect to see this kind of blended usage of courses as SPOCs expand dramatically. So today on edX, we have over 200 instances of such SPOCs running, starting with two or three about 3 years ago. We have over 200 instances running all over the world in high school campuses, in community colleges and state colleges, at other national universities and at corporations. And so we've gone to 200, and I expect that over the next couple of years, we will go to thousands of such usages.
Fantastic. Anand, thank you for being with us. We are kind of out of the time that you gave us, so we'll continue the discussion in a while.
Hey, thank you. Always great chatting with you, Shamana, and keep up the great work. Thank you.